Blog Talk Radio.
Ain't got a dime to my name, what a terrible shame. Ho hum, ho ho hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho hum, ho ho hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho hum, ho 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 hum. Terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho hum, ho ho hum. I like a shady old tree. What's the matter with me? Ho hum, ho ho hum. There's nothing quite as grotesque as the man at the desk, looking outside at the sun. Shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho hum. Ho 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 ho
ho. Oh my gosh. Hey, good to be here with you, James Bostic, a conservative's perspective, and we're doing that through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. You go there, and you can type in Patriot Nation Radio Network, and you'll find ACP here live in its live incarnation a couple times a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. ACP brought to you tonight by Maximum Strength Lidocaine Icy Hot. Lidocaine plus menthol in the new no-mess applicator. It will desensitize aggravated nerves. And to mix that cocktail just right, you want to top it off with some Icy Hot medicated spray. For fast, long-lasting relief, no-mess continuous spray, and it works at any angle, dries quickly. Icy Hot medicated spray. Good to be with you. As I was getting ready to go to microphone here, just scant moments ago, I saw where, and you know what I do from about 6 to 6:30, something like that. Depends on how long it takes. I hit a bunch of pages on Facebook. And, you know, they're center-right pages, political type stuff, posting the show. Thank you. And one of my old friends from the early days of Facebook hit the like button on it. And it was awesome. I haven't talked to him in a long, long time. I mean, we pass through on Facebook. We'll like things that we do because we're mutual admiration society. He's a terrific writer, an outstanding writer, very gifted fellow in that department. His name is Andy Trevere. And Andy is a trucker out there in the heartland, man, keeping us alive. He's on the arteries of this nation, bringing nutrients, sustenance, all the good things that we need from wherever they are to wherever they need to be. And Andy, if you're listening, God bless you, buddy. It tickled me to see you there. And we need to get together and talk, even if it's just enough to say, hey. And I know I've been guilty about having other things to do, and that's how life is, but we were in the trenches together a long, long time ago. All this got started, and Andy was a part of it, many years ago on something that was once called Ricky's Opinion Page. You remember that, Andy? It's going back a ways. And Ricky's Opinion Page ultimately morphed into a conservative perspective, and it was just kind of like a free-form thought page, and Ricky Hubble would come up, another dear sweet friend, would come up with topics, polarizing topics, and people would weigh in on them. And we had some liberal trolls there that were really kind of vicious, and we did try and engage them for an extended period of time, oftentimes I think for too long. And, you know, invariably we'd have to wind up blocking them for a little while till they, you know, act like they had some sense. But Andy was one of the guys in there when these liberal trolls would hit our page with stuff, and he was a man. He was a bulwark, and we had a lot of fun back in those days. So, Andy Trevere, here's to you, bro, Chacho. Love you, buddy. Okay, tonight we've got the State of the Union address, and was looking at Breitbart today, and Breitbart is the news site as well as their news, their satellite news programs are outstanding. And I think on a lot of different levels in terms of the mainstream and in terms of those 63 million Americans that voted for the Big D, it's a reflection of our thoughts and our concerns. And Joel Pollack, one of the stables over there, he came up with this. And it is what Trump should say, and it'll be on, I think, probably at 9 tonight. That's when he likes to do his best work. It gives the news networks an hour to bloviate and show you, you know, how little they really know. But President Donald Trump will deliver the State of the Union address to a special joint session of Congress Tuesday evening. And this is what some of the Breitbart editors and reporters would like to hear the president talk about. Number one, and this shouldn't be much of a surprise, the wall is everything. And Democrats only oppose it because of politics, not because they disagree. Trump's going to give his speech while Congress is still negotiating over border security, 10 days left before the February 15 deadline, after which a government shutdown will reoccur. The wall, the fence, the physical barrier would help stop illegal immigration. It would protect Americans from illegal alien criminals. And it would preserve the rule of law. It would also help defend the United States from the Mexican cartels and help disrupt the drug trade, which feeds on our people. Trump could quote Democrats' own words back at them, as he has in the past, about the importance of stopping illegal crossings at the southern border. He should remind the nation, and he would be prescient to do this, that if not for politics and basically hating Donald Trump, and Trump supporters, they would support the wall. But because of this personal animus, because they are blinded in their hatred for Donald Trump and indirectly us, they are ignoring the experts trained in this field of endeavor who are telling Congress how and where to build the barriers at minimum cost to the taxpayers. You should call on them to put national security first. He should also point out that the economy is booming, and all the experts who said tariffs would stop growth were wrong. The economy is going really, and you're not going to hear it on the mainstream, but the economy is going so insanely well that it's hard to quantify, though a few figures tell the tale. 304,000 new jobs created last month. Let me say that again. 304,000 jobs created last month, despite a government shutdown, economic growth around 3%. And when the previous administration told us that the days of rapid growth were over, we saw the best January stock market in 30 years. Americans were warned that new tariffs, especially on China, in response to unfair foreign trading practices would hurt consumers by raising prices. Prices have remained flat, allowing the Federal Reserve to ease off on its interest rate hikes, and the federal government has helped American farmers endure our rivals' retaliation. No one predicted at the onset of our trade war with China that the U.S. economy would be soaring and that China's economy would be stumbling, yet that's exactly what's happened. It doesn't mean that raising tariffs always works, but the Trump administration is taking advantage of a strong U.S. economy to reset trade relations. Gas prices also low, thanks in part to the energy boom in the U.S., which last year surpassed Saudi Arabia to become one of the world's top crude oil producers. And that boom is also bringing cleaner-burning natural gas online. Housing prices tumbled late last year, but they recovered, as has the stock market, which is strong yet again. He also needs to use the abortion debacle in Virginia to renew a commitment to protecting human life, all human life. The Democrats are eager to pass laws, and we're going to get into this later. The Democrats are eager to pass laws at the state level to allow abortion right up to and, if possible, beyond the moment a baby is delivered. This presents an opportunity for the president to respond with a message of moral clarity on this issue, especially after recent events in Virginia, where the governor, now struggling to hang on to his job in a bizarre racial scandal, seemed, at least to some who heard him, to justify infanticide last week. The president also needs to address the fact that Silicon Valley's tech elite are censoring free speech and they pose a danger to democracy. When Trump called out Google and other tech companies for censorship, the mainstream media accused him of being a conspiracy theorist. But Breitbart Scoops validated the president's position, revealing that Google's own internal research describes the tech giant's actions as censorship, and that YouTube and Google regularly manipulate political search results, including the suppression of pro-life content in search results for abortion. One of Google's own engineers called the manipulation of such search results for abortion a smoking gun that proves political censorship. How can Americans trust the Democrat process when the modern-day gatekeepers of information in Silicon Valley abuse their position? Facebook mass banned alternative media right before the midterms, even banned Trump's own election ad with other Republican ads. Google tried to boost turnout in pro-demographics in 2016, and absent any oversight, they have the potential to swing any election of its choosing with no paper trail. Social media platforms are adjusting their algorithms to favor the fake news media regularly called out by the president while suppressing alternative media that support the Make America Great Again agenda. They're also funneling money to them. Google will invest $300 million in establishment news media. Facebook is also funding a host of programming from mainstream broadcasters as well. He also needs to remind our friends across the aisle of the obvious, apparently. Democratic socialism, a dead end. And freedom, as a reminder, is finally returning to Venezuela. The new Democrat-run House of Representatives is loaded with Democratic socialists who somehow fail to see that their ideology is failing once again in Venezuela, which was once the richest nation in Latin America. Talking about Venezuela would also be a way to ridicule the far-left proposals that some House Democrats are touting, like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Bless her. I just want to hug her. You know, whenever she starts talking, I just want to wrap my arms around her and just hug her. Anyway, she's talking about a 70% marginal tax on the highest earners in America to pay for the Green New Deal, another socialist commie pinko ripoff. We've made tremendous inroads in foreign policy. The summit with North Korea and Kim Jong-un, everybody said that wasn't going to be anything. It's a snoozer. Progress has been made. They don't tout this stuff. Rachel Maddow doesn't tout this stuff. Chris Matthews, Chuck Todd, none of the establishment media types. And I'm going to go ahead and toss Fox in there too. Nah, I really don't have a lot of use for them either, for that matter. But they can't talk about what a great job the guy's doing because they're too heavily invested in hating him. Great God Almighty. Okay, but we're going to see some terrific stuff, I think, tonight with the State of the Union address. And it should serve as a reminder, again, when we listen to the president tout the accomplishments of the administration, this is a good thing because, again, we're not going to hear it anywhere else. And looking at some stuff on Front Page Magazine today, I came across a post by our friends at Prager University. You know I love Dennis Prager and Prager U. This particular monologue comes from a man named Kenneth Harper. He's a Canadian member of parliament, a couple times prime minister. And it's called Why Trump Won. I mean, we know why Trump won. But again, this is looking at it from a different perspective from our neighbors to the north. Check it out.
I was elected to the Parliament of Canada 7 times, 3 times as Prime Minister. I did not expect Donald Trump to be elected President of the United States. But unlike most observers, I did think it was at least possible. Why? Because I sensed, as Mr. Trump surely did, that the political landscape had shifted. The underlying issue is this. Over the last few decades, thanks to globalization, 1 billion people, mostly in the emerging markets of Asia, have lifted themselves out of poverty. This, of course, is a good thing. Yet in many Western countries, the incomes of working people have stagnated or even declined over the same period. In short, many Americans voted for Donald Trump because the global economy has not been working for them. We can pretend that this is a false perception. We can keep trying to convince people that they misunderstand their own lives. Or we can try to understand what they are saying and offer some solutions. I prefer the latter approach. Let me begin with this. In our contemporary world, there are, as British journalist David Goodhart describes it, those who can live anywhere and those who live somewhere. Imagine you work for an international bank, computer company, or consulting firm. You can wake up in New York, London, or Singapore and feel at home. Your work is not threatened by import competition or technological dislocation. You vocally support all international trade agreements and high levels of immigration. You're one of those who can live anywhere. There are a lot of those people, but there are a lot more completely unlike them. Let's say you're a factory worker, small business person, or in retail sales. Your work has been disrupted by outsourcing, cheap imports, and technological change. Your children attend the local schools, and your aging parents live nearby. Your social life is connected to a local church, sports team, or community group. If things go badly at your company, or if policy choices by politicians turn out to be wrong, you can't just shift your life to somewhere else. Like it or not, you depend on the economic policies of your national or state government. When it doesn't come through for you, you're not happy. And when it ignores you entirely, you get angry. It's easy for anywheres to dismiss these concerns. But the anywheres faith in global solutions and multinational political bodies is founded more on fantasy than fact. The fact is, the critical functions of laws and regulations and monetary and fiscal stability, among other things, are provided by nations, not global institutions. The nation, with all its flaws, is a concrete reality. The global community is little more than a concept. Yet it is the anywheres, with their faith in globalization, not the somewheres who have dominated the politics of almost every advanced country. That is, until now. This sea change is not limited to the United States. The same dynamics, anywhere elites versus somewhere populace, is playing out across the Western world. These populists, as I've tried to show, are not the ignorant and misguided deplorables depicted in mainstream media. They are our family, friends, and neighbors. The populace represent, by definition, the interests of ordinary people. And in a democratic system, the people are supposed to be our customers. So how, then, can we best serve them? I propose an approach I call populist conservatism. Grounding ourselves in tried and true conservative values, we must speak to the issues that concern the somewheres and their families, those of ordinary people, not elites. Those issues include market economics, trade, globalization, and immigration. In addressing these issues, conservatives should remain pro-free market, pro-trade, pro-globalization, and pro-immigration. Going in a completely opposite direction in any of these areas is a mistake. But being pro-market does not mean that all regulations should be dismantled or that government should never intervene to protect workers. Being pro-trade does not imply that every trade agreement is a good one. Being pro-globalization should not entail abdicating loyalty or responsibility to our country and our local communities. And being pro-immigration should never mean sanctioning illegal immigration, erasing our borders, or ignoring the interests of our citizens. I call this populist conservatism, but it's really just conservatism. Conservatism is about seeing the world as it is. It's also inherently populist because it is about serving real people rather than theories. I'm Stephen Harper, author of Right Here, Right Now, Politics and Leadership in the Age of Disruption for Prager University. Thank you for...
I'm not normally one, and I haven't been given to it because I don't... I just haven't. But it is clear it's something I probably need to address, and I'm sure there are a lot of you out there that are listening. New listeners, by the way, thank you. We're happy to have you with us. We appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and talk about this stuff. Globalism and nationalism. Globalism as we see it today is not a good idea. And the nationalism that we see today is not a bad idea. It is the natural response by people who love their country. It's not just Americans. The Italians are doing this. There's a lot of people that are trying to break with, and look at how, you know, it started out as a noble effort. And I'm talking about Brexit in Great Britain aspiring to leave the European Union. It doesn't look like it's going to happen, or it's going to be something, you know, some kind of bastardized compromise that isn't what they intended, and they'll be stuck for a long time. I hope that's not the case, but it may be. Nationalism is, like I said, that's the natural response to this overreach by these globalist types. What does that mean? Well, you know, I don't know what it means, really, but probably by Thursday, after I've had a chance to Google it and digest things and look some stuff over and do a little research and talk to some of my people, I'll have a better handle on it. It's bad. Global cooperation between nations? No, that's good. One world order, one world government? Yes, that's bad. That's very bad. The United States, nor any other nation, should ever subjugate themselves to a world authority, not the United Nations, not anybody. Which leads me to the United Nations. And this is what I have to say about that.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
In terms of the UN, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think we should be a member of the United Nations. I think we should withdraw from the United Nations. I think we should also withdraw our money from the United Nations, and I think we ought to draw up paperwork to have the United Nations withdraw from the United States. Yeah, I know, they probably got some kind of land permit in perpetuity or whatever, but you know what? Let them enforce it. Isn't that the point of having a State Department to enter into treaties with other nations? The UN and the horse she rode in on. Oh, well, you know what? It's a little bit early, but I think we're going to go ahead and cut to a little musical interlude. I'm a little on the dry side here, so let me find something. Also, coming up, I can't remember if it's this Thursday or not. Let me get through here and check. A couple weeks back, our wingman and Thursday night host, Mark Hoffman with Patriot Nation Radio Live, had Roger Stone on as a guest. You've heard what happened to Roger Stone in the meantime. Roger Stone predicted this would happen. By God, he wasn't kidding around, and it did. Barring the gag order, which may or may not be in effect at this time, Roger Stone's going to be a guest with Mark again, and we're going to hear some more about this. That should be a really exciting show coming up here in the next couple weeks. We will be promoting that. Roger Stone will be back with Patriot Nation Radio Live. That's going to be that's a pretty big deal, honestly. That is. So we will be back. I'm going to take a long music break this time because I got a few things to take care of. But we'll be back and load it up with what we're going to talk about on the other side as soon as I figure out what that is. More of ACP after this.
Drink to me only. That's all I ask, and I will drink to you. How long I've been on? I don't care if the sun don't shine. I do my drinking in the evening time when I'm in Las Vegas. You can sit in the sun and camp. I get my color from a sunray lamp when I'm in Las Vegas. I love the laughs and love the life. There's fun of every kind. Next time I come, I'll bring my wife. I'll do that if I lose my mind. A wife in Vegas, take my advice. It's like going to China with a sack of rice. But I love Las Vegas. I love Vegas in the summer. I love it in the fall. I love Vegas, may I say that it's a gasser, yeah. I love Vegas like it's Egypt and I am Nasser. I love Vegas every moment. Ooh, it's my favorite atmosphere. I love Vegas. Why do I love Vegas? Because my money's here. I love Vegas when I'm winning. I love it when I lose. I love Vegas like the army loves its manuals. I love Vegas like Sinatra loves Jack Daniels. I love Vegas every moment. Oh, Mr. Untrotter, I must cheer. A-U-C.
Margot. I love Vegas. Ach, du liebe, do I love Vegas? Because my blood is here. I love Vegas when I'm loaded. I love Vegas when I am not. I love Vegas just like Khrushchev loves being indignant, more than even my wife Jeannie loves being pregnant. I love Vegas every moment. When I leave, I shed a tear. Oh, I love Vegas. Jesus Christ, do I love Vegas. I'll make it good and clear. It's because my girl's right here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In my life when I was down so low, a mosquito wouldn't even bite me. I lost my job, my four-wheel drive. I even got thrown out of my trailer. All because of one thing. Freebasing cocaine. That's all my life was basing. Nothing else. I was on that last lap with that checkered flag about to weigh me on into hell. But I got lucky. I got in a rehab program down there at Redstone Arsenal down there in Alabama. And with them people helping me, well, that smoky white devil is no longer a part of my life. And I can proudly say that today, I do not freebase cocaine. Now, I'll take a drink now. I will take a drink, but I do not freebase cocaine. But, you know, I'll take a drink, and I might even smoke a little reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But as far as basing goes, I don't do it. Now, I'll do some toot now. Don't get me wrong. I will do some toot, you know. You know, if you party and everything, somebody comes up and give it to you, it's impolite not to take it there. So me and my girlfriend, Sally, we party, man. I tell you, we do party. So, you know, I will do some toot. We do, you know, on a good weekend there, we call a bunch of friends over, we do about an 8-ball of toot there. But we don't base. I do not freebase cocaine. We'll make that clear. I don't do it. Well, I tell you what, that drinking now, I will not drink that tequila. Now, I tell you what, the last time I drank it, I got wild and everything. My girlfriend said I beat up on Sally. And, you know, when I done that, it hurt me a lot more than it does her when I'm beating the hell out of her. So I don't drink that tequila now. I don't do any basing. I do not freebase. That's two things I don't do. It's no longer part of my life. But I tell you what, I will tequila. I admit, I do drink it about twice a year, you know. I drank some tequila, and of course, when I do drink it, Sally, you better look out, because you know I'm going to go upside that head now. Oh, but basically, I don't do. I heard somewhere coffee's bad for you, that caffeine mess. I read that somewhere. So I do that speed to get back up again. Of course, you got to get ready the next day and going all day long, part of everything. But as far as basing goes, I don't do that. I will not freebase cocaine. I don't touch it. Unless it's my birthday, something, man, a special occasion, I'll get out that pipe and I'll base. I won't freebase cocaine if I'm behind the wheel of a car. I won't do it. If I'm driving the car, I won't do it. Unless, you know, you stop in traffic, you know you're gonna be there a while, ain't nothing on radio. I'll pull out that pipe and I'll base. But I will not freebase cocaine. If I'm in church. I will not freebase cocaine in churches, unless, you know, it's during a hymn and I don't like something. I might get out that pipe and I'll base in it. I admit it. And I won't do it during the sermon, though. I will not freebase cocaine in church during the sermon unless I've heard it before. Unless, you know, I've heard that song, I won't hear the same thing. You just won't sit there and do nothing. So I'll get out that pipe and I'll base. But I won't do it I will not do it at the altar. I will not. I can tell you right now, I've been through that rehab, and freebasing is no longer part of my life.
This message brought to you by the Redstone Drug Rehabilitation Center, reminding you to just say nope to dope.
Look, I don't care who you are. That's funny. I laugh every time I play that. That's just great. Don't know who the dude is, but by damn, he's a genius. Welcome back, ACP. Here Tuesday night in our live incarnation. We do this, as I said, live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Blogtalkradio.com and then Patriot Nation Radio Network, and that's where you'll find us. Thank you. Good to be here, as usual. We also do a recorded version of the show, too, which goes out on the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. They have two audio streams there, the Liberty and the Justice stream, outstanding podcasts, outstanding hosts. And ACP is proud and humbled to be moving in such rarefied air. Really proud thing for us. Okay. Last week, and in the last couple of weeks, we have seen, or at least I think we have seen, some frankly horrifying developments in our national conscience. And what I'm talking about is, of course, New York Governor Cuomo signing a law. I'm going to call it what it is. You know, it's late term abortion. Sure, that's what they want to say. A very, very late term. Okay, late term to the point of infanticide. No, abortion's a terribly, even now, 40 years after Roe v. Wade, it's still a terribly divisive and polarizing issue. And with good reason. But at the same time, in terms of moral clarity, there should be absolutely no issue at all. It is not, well, the argument is made that it is a clump of cells. Granted, yes. What kind of cells? Are they squirrel cells? No, I don't think they are. Are they koala bear cells? No, they're not koala bear cells either. When we examine the DNA of this clump of cells, we find them to be human. Now, we all know about the birds and the bees, and we know that when mommy and daddy break out the wedding tackle, what's going to happen here. So we're not going to delve into that. But there comes a point in this process, within this 9 month or so gestation period, where this clump of cells begins to take form, begins to take shape, human form, shape. Senate Democrats, led by Washington Senator Patty Murray, blocked a bill that would require babies born alive during abortion to receive reasonable medical care and transport to a hospital. Senate Democrats, I'm going to say it again. Senate Democrats, led by Washington Senator Patty Murray, blocked a bill that would require babies born alive during an abortion to receive reasonable medical care and transport to a hospital. Senator Ben Sasse introduced the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act to protect infants who have survived failed abortions. Democrats objected. Senate Democrats said, and this is the lady who says this is Marjorie, I hope I get this right, Marjorie Dannenfelser. She's president of the Susan B. Anthony list. She said Senate Democrats had the chance today in this bill, this provision, this protection act. Senate Democrats had the chance today to prove that they're not the party of infanticide, and instead they doubled down on extremism. The Democrat Party's agenda of abortion on demand through birth and even beyond is radically out of step with the standards of decency the overwhelming majority of Americans expect from their leaders. Well said, Madge. Well said indeed. We urge the Senate to bring the bill to the floor for a recorded vote so Americans can know where each senator stands, and we urge its passage. It's time to get this bill swiftly to the president's desk for his signature. Here's how it would work. The Born Alive Act states that Congress acknowledges that an infant born alive during a failed abortion is a legal person for all purposes under the law in the United States and entitled to all the protections of such laws. Any infant born alive after an abortion or within a hospital, clinic, or other facility has the same claim to the protection of the law that would arise for any newborn or for any person who comes into a hospital, clinic, or other facility for screening or treatment, or otherwise becomes a patient within its care. Under the bill, healthcare providers who would fail to provide medical care to an infant born alive after abortion could be fined or imprisoned for up to 5 years or both. They don't say how much the fine is, though. According to the Born Alive Act, the intentional killing of an infant born alive after abortion shall be punished as intentionally killing or attempting to kill a human being. Do you know why? Because that's what is happening. They are killing or they are attempting to kill a human being, an innocent, defenseless, helpless human being. In Virginia, thankfully, the legislation died. Doesn't mean it's going to stay dead. It just means it's dead for now. Upon the decision or agreement between patient and healthcare provider, the baby could be aborted at the time of delivery. Do you understand that? The baby's out in the world. It's being delivered. It's here. And now it's not. You guys have been to nurseries. You've had babies. Your friends have had babies. You've been to the nurseries. You see, lying in those cribs, that which would otherwise be butchered. This is why the Democrats are the party of destruction. I hope I've got time to do it. Eileen Toplansky had a post put up in American Thinker, which is awesome. in both cases. The elation that we saw in New York and with the politicians where Governor Cuomo was signing the law, the elation was about death. And that's not really surprising since it is becoming patent more and more every day that the D in Democrat stands for destruction. Democrats, you know, will couch their destructive tendencies in euphemisms like social justice and women's rights. But one thing is clear, there is no objection from any Democrats as the party embraces the most radical left-wing ideology of all, meant to result in the demise of America. Success is to be destroyed. Advancement to be suppressed. Babies are expendable. Hubris under the cloak of social justice slogans runs amok. It extends into each issue the Democrats embrace. Every city that's come under Democrat control is proof positive that instead of raising the standard of living for the occupants, the city falls to crime, gangs, and drugs. In fact, America is awash with troubled, dysfunctional cities that have been electing Democratic mayors for decades. Their restrictive economic policies combined with outright corruption result in the death of the middle class. Once that is gone, the city is done for. Yet the Democrat slate of socialist-loving candidates continues to opt for this destruction as its members tout the 70% tax, which would turn America into Venezuela. Concomitant with this assault is the death of outrage as diversions, half-truths, equivocations, and sophistry now describe the Democratic Party. Moreover, the destruction of public schools, once the jewels of American education advancement, have been taken over by the Democrat left. John Perazzo documents that in his Shame of Our Schools article on how the Democrats have destroyed public education in the inner cities. It's about the exploitation of our children's minds rather than the elevation of their thinking. A mind is indeed a terrible thing to waste, yet in this generation of more credentialed students than ever before, many of these same students are functionally illiterate as they clutch a college degree to show for it. The latest assault on American education, resulting in the wanton destruction of excellence, is at Harvard University, a bastion of left-wing ideology and outright discrimination. Harvard denies admittance to Asian students because such does not comport with the left-wing diversity that has permeated and poisoned centers of higher learning. Abe Greenwald writes in The War on Asian Americans how at Harvard, the attack on Asian American applicants is so clear, deliberate, and systematic as to be disturbingly similar to the most bigoted chapter in that institution's history. And that was during its campaign to purge Jews from its student body throughout the early decades of the 20th century. Academia, or as I like to call it, Macademia, because it's nuts, dominated by left-wing Democrats, has not disturbed one iota for once again singling out one group for exclusion and perpetuating a great sin against thousands of individuals. Thus, the thinking goes that it is moral to destroy the aspirations of one group in favor of another. Mayor Bill de Blasio will not work to improve the education of New York's Hispanic and black student population. Instead, he will destroy the highly touted specialized high school's admissions test, which has always been an academic, not a race-based examination. No one will bother to inquire why so many blacks and Hispanics continue to do poorly. Could it be that public schools deliberately dumb down their education? Could it be that Spanish-speaking students do not assimilate it and are not held to a higher standard of learning English like every other immigrant group? Could it be that the gang violence in the inner cities is more a magnet than any constructive activities because corrupt politicians will not improve conditions? No. That would not fit the lie that America is a racist society, which is the dominant theme of the Democrat Party, wherein the word racism is applied to everything. If the protection of innocent babies does not register within the Democrat Party's moral compass, surely Democrats don't care about securing American borders from vicious MS-13 gangs, human traffickers, Islamic terrorists, and sexual predators. Rather, the Democrats paved the road with censorship and scorn at common sense, ideas, and solutions. Michael Cutler talks about how the term illegal aliens, which is what they are, has now become undocumented workers, softening the facts about people who are en masse, And we're back. Thank you for allowing me to choke back my rage. Michael Cutler explains the term illegal aliens has now become undocumented workers, softening the facts about people who are en masse making an assault in the United States. In fact, the desire of the majority of people to be fair and polite has been perverted to obfuscate important issues. The Democrat Party's globalists continue to exploit language. Hence, when it comes to immigration, consider how effectively scammers with malevolent motives have cynically played the compassion card. They see vulnerabilities to exploit in the compassionate and charitable characteristics of Americans, turning virtues into veritable weapons to be used against us. The linguistic convolutions of Nancy Pelosi are astonishing as she weaves and bobs to avoid the obvious. To think that the Democrats were interested in dreamers. Instead, they're working to destroy this group's chances through Trump's latest accommodation. In a perverse twist, it seems like King Midas, whose touch turned everything into gold, the Democrat globalists destroy everything they lay their hands on. Life is supplanted for calculated death, either through late-term abortions or death panels for the elderly. Liberty and opportunity are squashed as Democrats eagerly await the time when they can tax people to the point of abject poverty. Left-wing Democrats have made a devil's pact with social media sites that serve to censor and close American minds. The first step towards a totalitarian world. Pursuit of happiness can never be the aim of the Democrat left, because if Americans are content, the Democrats will have lost their base. Who will need to be dependent upon Democrat government freebies? The grandiose but completely unworkable ideas of free health care and free tuition can be implemented only when the left has completely indoctrinated its school-age population so that genuine intellectual curiosity and questioning are subdued and eventually snuffed out. Punishment, shaming, and ostracism result if one disagrees with the left-wing Democratic Party line. Oh, and the assault on boys. This is not about empowering the girls. It's about making men feel that it is wrong to stand up and be heroic. It's about demeaning those traditional ideas of honor and courage and protection of the home and family. Democrat operatives are sculpting boys in such ways that these good manly attributes are scorned and eventually destroyed. They have already succeeded within the black population, where 72% of black children are fatherless as a result of Democrat legislation over the years. Don't take mine or Eileen's word for this. You look it up yourself. Extreme ideas are fostering extreme behavior to the point that a nine-month-old baby can now be murdered as he is born. Are there any sensible Democrats left in the party that are troubled by the radical tilt that their party has taken? Why don't they speak up? Why don't they put on their big boy pants? Why don't they leave the party? Clearly, they ignore Winston Churchill's warning Dictators ride to and fro on tigers from which they dare not dismount. And the tigers are getting hungry. If these weak-minded politicians continue to support their party's policies, accept the anti-Semitism of the party's latest arrivals, and allow the murder of innocent babies without any restrictions, they too will end up in the tiger's mouth. The destructive dictatorship of the Democrat Party will eventually be their own demise. In 1908, Winston Churchill said, "What is the use of living if it be not to strive for noble causes and to make this muddled world a better place for those who will live in it after we're gone?" We, all of us, regardless of political persuasion, must not be afraid to halt the truly destructive tendencies that we see around us so that the next generation will not look at us in disdain. For starters, the Democrat Party has to be seen for what it is, a party that exalts, that celebrates when destruction is achieved. Whew. Eileen Toplansky, you can find her work at American Thinker and other places throughout the internet. That was some terrific stuff. That article is a keeper, because you know what? Ms. Toplansky could have written that 10 years ago. She could have written that 5 years ago. She could have written that 6 years from now. Strong stuff. Well, we're about down to the bottom, top of the hour, end of the show, and I want to thank you guys. I'm going to go ahead and knock it. We got a couple minutes left. Thank you all very much for tuning in. It really means a lot to me to get the opportunity to hang out with you guys and get to talk about some of these things that I see on the internet and let us reason together about them. President, I'm sure, will be addressing the nation most likely at 9 tonight, and you know you're going to want to tune in for that. That's going to be some pretty good stuff. I personally cannot wait to see Nancy Pelosi sitting behind the President of the United States looking as though she were wearing a dead fish for a tie tack, and Donald Trump will know this. There's going to be some psychology going on up there tonight. You're going to watch it. I know he's going to play it lean and straightforward on the address. He knows what the American people want to hear. He knows how it's going to resonate with them. And he's going to do it in such a way that it twists the Democrat heads. You can bet on that. Thank you, Guinevere. 90 seconds left. ACP heard here twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Recorded for the Talk America Radio Network as well, talkamericaradio.org. Two audio streams there, the Liberty and the Justice stream. ACP heard various times throughout the damn week on either one of those. Get your snacks. Find your favorite bloviating cable news guy. Turn it on for the pre-address because, you know, it's going to be like the Super Bowl. They're going to talk all their crap like they know. Yeah, like they know what's going on. Enjoy the speech. You live in the greatest country on earth. I don't care what Nancy Pelosi says. I don't care what Chuck Schumer says. Even with all of her faults, you live in the greatest country on earth. Never, ever forget that. I'm James Bostic. We'll be back on Thursday, 7 p.m., taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.